It's time to talk about food. It's time to talk about food with our regular Monday guest who stops by every Monday morning, Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Good morning, Arthur.
I'm hardly a guest.
Well, you're a guest every morning.
I know, but I think of myself as part of the fabric.
Yes, you are part of the fabric. Definitely part of the fabric.
And I don't really like to cook when the weather is the way you like it, because I don't like weather the way it is. I much prefer a crisp October, November, and even a rainy November day. It's now over 80 degrees here and very, very humid. I do have the window open, and I'm sitting in front of it because there is the tiniest breeze, and it's going to go up another 10 degrees at least by midday, so I'm appreciating what we have. So I have a dilemma that I have a family coming to visit and eat next Saturday. They are the children and grandchildren of my dear friend Suzanne Hamlin, who just died a few weeks ago. And Suzanne, as Bob would refer to her, is my, or was my, office wife. We worked together at the Daily News for years, and I hired her at the Daily News because I adored her writing. I didn't know her. I didn't adore her yet. Anyway, Suzanne was our star food writer at the Daily News, and then she went to the New York Times, where she covered real estate. So on two counts, we had a lot to talk about. And Suzanne, oh, she did all the things. But anyway, Nathaniel, her son, who's has two children, a teenager and a not-yet teenager, and his wife, who has a movie production company, they're coming for lunch. What do you serve in the middle of August? And I have air conditioning, but basically it just takes down the... If I put all the air conditioners on, we have window air conditioners, if I put the three air conditioners on, we will get the humidity down to a very comfortable degree, and the temperature will be comfortable, but still. So yesterday I bit the bullet, so to speak, and turned the oven on for a few hours. I made caponata. This is a start. I figured this was a start for the menu. At least I get that done. It stays very well in the refrigerator for quite a while. Certainly for a week, less than a week, it's fine. It's maybe even better. And so that was my start. I'm trying to compose the rest of the menu, but let's start and include, you know, cold things, or at least things that I can make ahead, because one, I want to visit with them more than I want to feed them, although I want to feed them. And I considered making Suzanne recipes that I still make. I'll tell you about those in a minute. But in the end, I'm going to make my own food. So caponata, or caponatina, you'll see it sometimes, is basically sweet and sour eggplant with other stuff. It's more complicated than just eggplant. And it's Sicilian, and it's made all over Sicily. It's made differently. I mean, I have friends who just came back from Sicily, and she said every time we ordered it, it was something different. It's not something different, but it could either be very well made or very poorly made, and the poorly made is basically a puddle of grease, of oil. In fact, I make caponata every summer when all the vegetables that it requires are in season, and because I like to keep it in the house, and it's great for other meals. Not when you make it. So I made last year. I make a baked version of caponata that I learned from a friend named Franca, who lives in Syracuse, Sicily. She happens to be my friend Iris's sister-in-law. So Iris and I make Franca's recipe for baked caponata, and Franca started baking hers instead of frying it. Almost everything is fried in this, because she had, at the time, now they're grown men now with their own families, but at the time, she had very health-conscious teenage sons. And the teenage sons were very, in those days, very fat-conscious, and so she came up with the baked version of caponata. Other people make baked versions, but anyway, I make hers. and it has a limited amount of oil in it. And also, the oil is probably more antioxidant because it doesn't get cooked in a frying pan. So what you need for this is it's eggplant. So you need at least, I would say it's one medium eggplant, but it could be two smaller eggplants. You need about a pound and a half to 2 pounds of eggplant, which I cut into 1-inch I wash it, or at least wipe it down with a damp paper towel, and then, because you want to eat, do it with the skin, you cut off the calyx, which is the green top. By the way, to select eggplant, and it's easy at a farmer's market because it's all freshly picked, but if you're picking your eggplant in the supermarket, do look for a green calyx that indicates that it was recently picked, which is better than not recently picked. And it should have nice, shiny skin. There were some eggplants at my farmer's market on Saturday that was so shiny, I didn't know what they were, but there was something glaring over on the other side of the market, and I go over, even with my sunglasses, they were unbelievably mirror shiny eggplant. These were freshly picked. Anyway, I'd already bought my eggplant. Anyway, I got a great eggplant. So you need about 1.5 to 2 pounds of eggplant for this recipe, and it depends on the size of them. I would say 2 medium, 3 smaller ones of red and or yellow peppers. I prefer red peppers, period. Yellow peppers are pretty. They're good for the color. I still think that red peppers are the sweetest of the various color peppers. So for 2 pounds of eggplant, 2 medium peppers, when you the eggplant I cut into 1-inch cubes, and it ends up about 6 cups of eggplant, and I cut the red pepper into quarter, and also into half inch cubes, half the size of the eggplant, half inch dice, and it ends up about 3 cups of. I measured this again yesterday on Saturday when I made it, by the way, just to make sure. This is from my book, The Southern Italian Table. I noticed on my website, not on my website, on my computer, I had a slightly different version of this, but I made it this way exactly. So 3 cups of that. Now, I did not use, one thing I diverged, I did not use a sweet onion only because I didn't want to go to another market to get a sweet onion. But if you can get a large sweet onion, that's what you use in this. I use the large, regular yellow onion. And that comes out to, once you cut it into half-inch dice, about a cup and a half to 2 cups of onion. So far we have onion, red pepper, eggplant, and now this is somewhat problematic. 2 large ribs of celery cut into half-inch dice ends up about a cup of celery. So I never buy celery from the farmer's market because my experience is the celery that's grown around here is very, very tough and stringy. But the celery in the market the other day looked really good, so I bought it. And then I dared put it in the caponata without blanching at first, meaning putting the diced celery in some boiling water and letting it boil for a minute or two. That's what I would normally do. But I didn't do it yesterday, and I thought, well, you know, this is going to soften up in the oven. But in fact, it has left a little crunch in the caponata. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying if you don't like crunch, then you do want to blanch the celery. If you're buying this kind of tough celery, if you buy Pascal celery in the supermarket, you don't have to do that. So all these things, we're talking onion, bell pepper, celery, eggplant, go into a roasting pan. It won't be a thick layer. It'll be a nice layer. Keep, toss them all together. Add 2 heaping tablespoons of salted capers, which I always have in the house. I rinse them well, and then I let them soak for 10 minutes in cold water, and then drain it. If you don't have salted capers, although they're now easily gotten in the supermarket, you can use the kinds that come packed in brine or really in vinegar, because they're a little vinegary, because this is, in fact, a sweet and sour dish, so it works. 2 heaping tablespoons, a lot of capers. Garlic. I like to put garlic in mine. Some people don't. I put in a heaping tablespoon of chopped garlic yesterday, Saturday, and I used a little more oil than my book says. It says a quarter of a cup. I used a third of a cup. Truth be told, a half a cup wouldn't have been bad either. A couple tablespoons of sugar and a couple tablespoons of apple cider vinegar and a heaping tablespoon of salt. And that's it. You mix all that up together in your roasting pan, and then a 14-ounce can of tomatoes, or a half a big can of tomatoes. And I, as my recipe instructed, just crushed them by hand, one tomato at a time, over the vegetables in the pan, and put in all the tomato puree that was in the can as well, and scraped out the can nicely, and tossed it one more time. This is, by the way, after you've tossed it with the oil. Then you toss it with the tomatoes, and then put it in a 400-degree oven. This was, I had to bite the bullet here, because my oven takes at least 15 minutes to get up to 400 degrees, and then this took 2 hours to cook, tossing it around every 30 to 40 minutes. My recipe says it's 90 minutes. I wanted it a little bit more done. Everything was tender at 90 minutes, but in the end, I really wanted to be very tender, vegetables. And so I left it in for, another 15 minutes, and then I turned off the oven and let it sit in the cooling-off oven for 15, 20 minutes. I have now 7 cups. By the way, the recipe was very precise about this. It makes about 7 cups. Well, I had maybe 2 spoons shy of 7 cups, and it's now snugly in the refrigerator. What am I going to do with this? This is a very good antipasto. I will serve it with plenty of good bread. Maybe I'll make bruschetta, turn on the top of the stove to toast some bread, and rub with garlic. We're going to have sliced tomatoes, tonnata. Sliced tomato, I mean, I always say my Facebook feed doesn't have anything political, any political misinformation. It only gives wrong temperatures and oven pan sizes. But all my friends, I have to say, all my friends in Italy are making this. So I guess I should be making this. This is what you make in the middle of the summer when you don't want to cook. Tomatoes tonnato. You know, the original dish is vitello, veal, with a tuna sauce. But the tuna sauce is sensational on midsummer tomatoes. And who wants to braise or simmer or whatever a veal roast? It also costs a fortune. And also, not exciting. I don't find veal exciting, whereas I find tomatoes in midsummer exciting. Tonnato is tuna mayonnaise, basically. And doesn't have to, in the original recipe, you're making it with some of the braising liquid from the veal and whatever. You don't need to do any of that. In my mini processor, I put a can of drained tuna, and I don't buy white tuna. I buy, light tuna, what they call light tuna. A normal can of tuna these days, I forget how many ounces it is, but, it's anywhere from 5.5 to 7 ounces. You drain it of the oil. Packed in olive oil. Drain it. Put it in your mini processor with a half a cup of mayonnaise, the juice of a half a lemon, maybe you'll add a little bit more later, a spoonful of capers. It could be out of the jar with the vinegary kind of capers, or if you use salt capers as I do, soak them and desalt them a little bit. I would say, a tablespoon of those. Anchovy. Now, if you're afraid of anchovies, you don't have to be afraid here, because you're not really going to taste it as anchovy, but it does boost the flavor. I would say 2 anchovy fillets for a can of tuna fish, and that's it. And whirl it in your mini food processor. If you have to thin it out a little bit, you can add some olive oil. And you already have a mayonnaise here, and incorporating some more oil will make it a little bit thinner, but also give it a great taste. I use, mayonnaise out of the jar. And that's it. And you spread that on, or dollop it, on slices of tomato. You could garnish it in different ways. I mean, if you want, if you're a caper lover, you can put a few capers on top. If you're an anchovy lover, you can put an extra anchovy fillet on top of each slice of tomato. And it'll be interesting to see what teenagers next week, very sophisticated teenagers who grew up in Manhattan with a food-writing grandmother, will see what they're going to pick. Also, basil. You can put, you know, an herb on. You can even put an herb in. I don't like what it does to the color, but certainly you could put some torn basil over this. I'm not sure what else I'm going to make, but I'm pretty sure I have to have some pasta, and I may well make the crudaiola, which is a raw pasta sauce. I'm not going to do a heavy-duty tomato one because we're going to have tomatoes tonnata. By the way, bread is essential for all of this, but not for the pasta. But a few weeks ago, I talked about raw pasta sauces, and I gave a recipe for one, which I call crudaiola because that was called that when I first encountered it. However, in looking through my files, I found a whole bunch of others as well, including one that is in my Southern Italian book called Garbage Pail Pasta. Now, I did not get credit for this, but after my book came out, there was a rash, so to speak, of recipes for garbage pail spaghetti. The name comes from a restaurant outside of Naples called I Corti. That's not how you say it in dialect. If you asked an Italian, Neapolitan, about this I Corti, you wouldn't know what you're talking about. I Corti, you know, is a dialect name. It means the little people, because the originators of the restaurant were twin midgets. Actually, I'm not sure if they were midget or dwarf, but they were little people. And now the place is run by descendants of the brothers. Now, I haven't been to this place in years. I have eaten at this restaurant several times. But the sister of the twins used to be in charge of the kitchen. She was not a kid when I met her, so I don't know who's in the kitchen now. But this pasta, I think mainly because of the name, got a bit of press, I would say, 5-6 years ago. And I'm sure if you go online on the Internet, you're going to find garbage pail. Mine is called thick spaghetti. But the word in Italian is, and by the way, you can translate this a couple of ways, and I did find somebody who was quite offended when I called it garbage pail, but the word in Italian is setaccio del immondizia. It's a pail of this and that. So the this and that is a lot of nuts, which I love in pasta. And I have to laugh. I'm laughing to myself because I got a letter once saying, I love this recipe, but as my husband is allergic to nuts, I made it without the nuts. Well, without the nuts, it's nothing. So it's it's a little this and a little that, folks. So if you don't have all these things in the house, you can substitute, or don't go out and buy for 1 tablespoon of this or that. 1 tablespoon of finely chopped, and I say finely chopped, walnuts. 1 tablespoon of finely chopped hazelnuts. A rounded tablespoon of pine nuts. Now, pine nuts have become really crazy expensive, and they're not all that good necessarily either. So if you don't want to put pine nuts in here, definitely double your walnuts. A couple tablespoons of raisins, preferably golden. A tablespoon, now again with the salted capers, I do buy salted capers. They're not hard to find. And when you rinse and let them soak a couple minutes, they have an amazing floral aroma, which vinegar capers never have, so that's why I use them. So you want a tablespoon of capers, a quarter of a cup, see, not very many, cherry tomatoes diced, just to give it a little color and juice, some oregano, you know, let's say 2 big pinches, a tablespoon of finely chopped parsley, and then finally 6 or 8 olives, whatever kind of purple olive you have. It could be green olives too, actually, but they use purple olives. They would use gaeta, which is the local olive, so to speak. And gaeta, by the way, are freestone. You pinch them, and the seed, the pit pops out. So they're very easy to pit and coarsely chop. And that's it. You mix all those things together with a good amount of olive oil. I would say at least a quarter of a cup of olive oil. And that gets tossed on at least, I would say, about a half a pound of thick spaghetti. If you don't want to use thick spaghetti, you can use regular spaghetti. You can use bucatini, is good for this too. And, you know, you boil the pasta, you drain it, and you drain it very well. And then you put this all in a pan with the ingredients, and that's it. Now, you can sauté all this if you like. I never do. On the restaurant, they do put all those ingredients in a pan, including the oil, and heat it all up together. I don't think it's necessary. It's, certainly this time of the year, you don't want to be turning on the stove if you don't have to. So there we go. That's at least part of my menu for Friday. Meantime, as a person who cooks a lot of his own food, I would say they're old friends, I always am looking for something new to do, just for variety. And this week, I made something from the New York Times cooking site. I somehow happened over Eric Kim's videos. And I watched Eric Kim is a New York Times food writer. He is first-generation American, Korean, grew up in Atlanta, and just published a book, which I may actually buy. We'll see. I don't buy cookbooks these days. I give away cookbooks of Korean-American food. But on the other hand, I do follow his recipes in the Times, and they're always appealing, but do I always want to make Asian food? That's not my bent. But this was. So it was. What sold me on this recipe is baked chicken thighs with a Thai fish sauce butter at the end. But that's not the whole deal. It's very easy. First of all, Eric makes his chicken exactly the way I do. Puts it on a baking sheet, 450 degrees, 40 minutes. That's my go-to for chicken thighs. Yes, some of them are smaller, some of them are larger. The larger ones are perfect, the smaller ones, maybe they're a little bit more done, but really not bad. So he does that, and then he pulls it out after 25 minutes, and as he said, which is what really struck me, he said, this Korean-American, it renders a lot of schmaltz, the chicken, meaning chicken fat. He says, and you don't want to waste that chicken fat, that schmaltz. So he tosses croutons, but he tears the bread instead of cutting it up. Torn bread. He tosses the schmaltz in the pan with torn bread and puts it back in the oven for the last 20 minutes. You get these fabulous tasting. My bread was very good, too. I bought a very nice loaf of bread, and I usually have about a half a loaf without the crust. Torn by hand, push the thighs to the side a little bit after 25 minutes, and toss my bread in the middle of the sheet pan into the schmaltz so that it got coated a little bit, put it back in the oven, and it was sensational, especially with the finishing sauce. Bob loved this sauce so much, next time he tells me I have to make double the sauce because he enjoyed dunking. This is a real forbidden diet thing. He loved dunking his already schmaltzy bread into this butter sauce. The butter sauce is 1 tablespoon of Thai fish sauce, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, and 1 tablespoon of brown sugar. I put it in my tiny, tiny butter warming pan, and you bring it to a boil, and when it's boiling, you take it off the heat. Eric tells you to reduce it a little bit. 1 minute is enough reduction here. You just want to blend the flavors, really. And then you take it off the heat and swirl in. I just had it on the at the end of a fork. 3 tablespoons of cold butter. I cut off 3 tablespoons. I put it on the end of a fork. swirled into the hot, the, off the heat, but hot seasonings, and that's it. Put the croutons and chicken on a plate, drizzled over the butter sauce on the chicken. I did not put it on the croutons, because I thought, for me, just the schmaltzy croutons, crispy, and some a little bit actually very brown and some not so brown. It was really delicious, schmaltzy croutons. But Bob loved the sauce so much that he put more on it. He was dunking everything into it. It doesn't produce much sauce. We're talking about maybe a quarter of a cup of sauce. So I see why next time he wants me to double the recipe. It's a lot of butter. That would be 6 tablespoons of butter for 2 people.
That's a lot of butter.
That's a lot of butter. No, I didn't. I only used 3 tablespoons of butter. By the way, I don't. This is a complaint I have about the chicken I like. The branded chicken that I buy, Smart Chicken, they only put 3 thighs in a package. So if you want 4 thighs for 2 people, you got to buy 2 packages. That's 6 thighs. So I'm not gonna. Free is just 2 thighs. I guess I could, but I when I get have to do that, I make all 6, and we just eat the other 2 for another meal, cold the next day. So that's what we did. So actually, if you wanted to make 6 thighs for 3 people, or even 8 thighs for 4 people, I think you have enough butter sauce, because it's very intense. You just want to drizzle it. But was that good?
Sounds good.
Was that good? So right. I did caponata, tonnato. So these are real hot weather things. You know that April 15th, which is this coming Saturday, is called Ferragosto in Italy. Nobody is working. The whole country closes mainly for the whole month of August, but in particular for the 2 weeks on either side of August 15th, which is now. Which is why I never understood why everybody wants to go to Italy in August. The weather's terrible. And by the way, my inspiration for cold things is coming from Judy Witz Francini, who lives outside Siena. And the weather there has been so horrific that all she does is post things about keeping cool. I have a friend who's in Rome right now and says it's unbelievably horrible.
Yeah, it's hot all over the world.
Well, you have to remember, in Europe, people don't have air conditioning the way we do here.
Yeah.
Which is why they don't admit so many green, whatever it's called. Right. I have friends who blame global warming on American clothes dryers.
Well,
they all have washing machines. But it's the clothes dryer that uses up the most energy, they say.
Okay.
I think they're right.
My grandmother.
Okay, so keep cool, everybody, as best you can. If you have air conditioning, that's great. If not, I don't know what to say. Lemonade is what I say. There are some days I don't want to do anything except have fruit and lemonade. Yesterday I said, can't I be a fructarian?
All right, Arthur, I'll speak
to you. Good food around.
Yeah, I'll speak to you next week.
Guys.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.
Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.